Hi, I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and welcome to The Miracle Within You, the show at the intersection of psychology, medicine, and spirituality that considers how the mind and body interact with each other to influence health and healing. With years of experience as a practicing psychologist in the health and wellness fields, and as a writer covering amazing stories of healing, I will explore with my guests how numerous factors influence our lives and our health. Thank you for listening. Hi, and welcome to The Miracle Within You, the show that looks at the intersection of spirituality, science, medicine, psychology, and how we can access within our mind-body some healing at a mental and behavioral level. You can look, we have a YouTube channel or A Miracle Within You, as well as a website. So feel free to visit that. And today I am delighted to have with me, all the way from about 100 yards away from my house, a neighbor who has a very, very compelling story about how you can put yourself first and take care of yourself under difficult circumstances. Her name is Laurie Etchells. Laurie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I hope I can help somebody.
I hope so. And if you're able to help one person, then it will certainly have been worth doing. And I'm sure you will do that. So let's kick off and tell the listeners about, you know, the trajectory of your life and then that critical period and how you handled it.
Okay, well, back in 2011, well, actually, I'm going to go back before that. Before that, I had gotten sick, very sick twice, and gone to the ER, and it was treated as basically like the flu. I was given meds for anti-nausea and that type of thing, and for pain. And then it would go away for a while. And then in 2011, I was up in Philadelphia visiting a relative, and I got very sick and landed up in the ER there. Well, they were astute enough to ask if they could do x-rays, and they did. Nothing was on there. So then they asked if they could do a CT scan, and we did. And it was discovered that I had a tumor on my pancreas. So I was coming home the next day, and he said, just go home, have an MRI done, and see what the results come back as. He said, I wouldn't panic about it yet, but I did. And I came home and I saw my family physician here on Hilton Head, and we did the MRI, and whoever read it came back and said, inconclusive, do it again in 3 to 6 months. And my first thought was, no, I'm not going to wait 3 to 6 months when I know I've got this on my pancreas, because I work in the dental care healthcare business and we teach our patients to be proactive. So I was handling it on more of the proactive end. And my doctor also agreed. So he sent me on to a gastroenterologist here. And that person, when he came in the room, I already had tears running out of my eyes because I was so sick to my stomach about all of this. And the reason why is because we had just buried my stepfather in 2009, and we took care of him here until he died, and he died from pancreatic cancer. So I already knew what all that was about, and we took care of him from his diagnosis until the end. Well, the gastroenterologist came in and he said, honey, don't worry. I'm 99.9% certain it's just a fatty tissue tumor. And I looked at him and I just straight up said, I'm sorry. No, that's not good enough for me. I need to know what this is. And he said, okay, I can see you're a black and white kind of girl. So let's send you up to MUSC and let them do an endoscopic ultrasound. So that's what we did. About a week and a half later, I went up to MUSC and I had this incredible woman doctor, Dr. Brenda Hoffman. She did the endoscopic ultrasound. I woke up, you know, 45 minutes later, and she said, I have to tell you, you have pancreatic cancer, but you are one of the very lucky ones, it's possible we can fix you. And so that's where we went from there. I met with an oncologist a week later up there. I elected to do everything up there, which still 13 and a half years later, I still go up there to do everything. Right. It's worth the 2.5 hour drive each way.
Right. Yeah. And so, and just for people to know that the medical center, USC, does have an amazing, facility, but particularly for cancer. And as Laurie implies, we're fortunate enough, it's only a 2.5 hour drive away from us. So it is accessible. I want to ask you one question, Laurie. If somebody hadn't suggested that to you initially, if you had just gone to the doctor and had the first test and somebody had said, "Man, I'm 99% sure it's nothing," do you think you would have still been insistent on saying, "No, I need to find out more"?
Knowing me, yes, I think I would have. Yeah. But most people, probably not. They would have probably taken him at his word.
That's right.
And if I had done that, we would not be having that conversation right now.
No. Absolutely. Because this is very, very, very important message that you have and a story that you have. That is, even if the doctor tells you it's 99.9% sure you haven't got it, whatever it is, especially if it's a major condition, an illness, it's still just a probability and a high probability guess. It is not certain.
Correct.
And you know that. And you had the wisdom and the courage to say, "No, I need to be sure." Now, that is a massive message for people, because I'm sure you've come across people with your story who haven't done that. Is that right? I'm sure you've seen people and talked to people.
I have.
But I wished I had done what you did.
I have. And one of those people who I did not know, but because it was one, my tumor actually had two cancers in it. One has been, it's come back four times. The other has never come back, which was the aggressive one. But the one that has come back, and I'm still here because I keep doing what I am told to do and asking the right questions. But Steve Jobs had the exact same cancer as me, and he chose to treat it basically holistically. Mm. And he really wasn't around that long, few years, but that was about it. So the biggest thing that I say to people is nobody's going to be your advocate except yourself.
Very, very important message, people. Listen to that. Nobody is going to be your advocate. You have to do it. And it's not about inconveniencing somebody or whatever. This is your life, potentially. It certainly was for Laurie. This is her life. And she said, "No, I need to be certain. I need to be certain." When you came around at USC and they said, "Man, you're really lucky," What was your reaction at that point?
Well, I was still in shock that I really did have cancer. I was 53 years old. I was in the best shape of my life. I work on my feet all day long. I was power walking 3 miles at a time or more, probably 2 or 3 times a week. I was going to 3 spinning classes that were almost an hour long. I mean, I was really healthy. Mm-hmm. And it's like falling off a ladder and just, bam, somebody slapped you in the face. It takes a while to absorb it all. It really does.
Oh,
you
yeah.
just don't go, "Oh, okay, well, I have cancer." It's not quite like that.
No. So the fundamental message here is you have to be your own advocate, and no matter how healthy you think you are, and as you say, you're in good shape, we're in good shape, right? You were taking care of yourself, and so forth. These things happen, And it sounds like you have a family history of cancer, is that correct? Or pancreatic cancer?
No, that was my stepfather.
Oh, okay, right.
My mother did have cancer, but it was not pancreatic.
Okay.
My biological father died from cancer, T-cell lymphoma. And I have a half brother that had renal cell carcinoma. And I didn't know all of that
Right.
until about 3 years ago
Oh, wow. Wow.
because I didn't know that he was actually my biological father. That's a whole different story.
Yes.
But I do have a family history of cancer, obviously, with a biological father, my mother, and a half brother. And other than that, no, don't know that anyone else has had it.
Right. But that is a problem with thinking about genetic history. A lot of people don't really know. They might know, what their parents had, but it might be difficult to know what their grandparents had, or the whole chain, family chain. You don't really know that. And so just because somebody in your family, it's not obvious they've had anything, it doesn't mean you aren't carrying the genetics for.
Right. And I was actually lucky enough to have them ask me about 2 years ago if I wanted to participate in a genetic testing for 84 different cancer genes. And of
Wow.
course, I said yes. And one of the reasons was because I have a daughter who asked me, "Mom, do you know if you have the BRCA genes for breast cancer?" And as it turned out, I don't. But they've also said with my cancer, from the start, every doctor at MUSC has said, "We think your cancer is environmental or chemical related." And so after doing the genetics test and pancreatic cancers being one of the a couple of the different things on there, I tested negative for it,
Yeah.
for genes. So it's not something I inherited from a family member. It probably is from what I've been exposed to, either at work or what I have consumed.
Yes, absolutely. And this is again when people are thinking about their condition, do we have a genetic? Well, even if you don't have a genetic, an obvious genetic connection with people who have had these conditions, so many of them are not genetic or purely genetic. They are, as you say, environmental, lifestyle, what have you. I see this quite a lot with dementia and Alzheimer's, where people will say, well, my parents didn't have it, or my grandpa. Yeah, strictly genetic, Alzheimer's is about 3% of it. It's a combination sometimes of genes, lifestyle, environment, all of those factors, and I'm sure a whole lot of factors we haven't yet uncovered yet. So I think we have to be careful about saying, well, there's no genetic history, so I should be okay. No, there's only one or two conditions that are totally genetic, but most are not. So you have to be careful about that, even if you can establish it. So again, very important part of your story, I think, is, hey, whether you knew you had the genes or not, it doesn't matter. You were still at risk, even if it was 0.01%, according to your doctor. That's still a risk, right? Yeah.
I think a lot of mine came from, I work with a lot of chemicals. Used to not wear a mask all the time when I would be doing that stuff in the lab. I do now all the time, mask and gloves. But in our business, it's so busy during the day that, I would leave my house in the morning with a cup of tea. And guess what went in that tea? Three sweet and low. It's been proven that that's ca cancer causing.
Yes. Yep.
Later in the day or the morning, I would switch over to Diet Coke, also bad for you.
Yep.
So we always had a bunch of lean cuisines in the office in the freezer because
Yep.
we sometimes didn't get but 5 minutes for lunch. So the, and this was just on and on every day, all day long. That's what we ate. And I do think that that probably contributed to it, which guess what I no longer do? There's no artificial sweeteners. There's no fat-free stuff in my house. There's no soda in my house. There's no frozen dinners in my house. It's bad for you. And while I might have been in the best shape of my life, what I was doing to the inside of my body by consuming that stuff was not good for me.
Yep, absolutely. And there's so many of those potential carcinogens in the environment, in the foods we eat, in the packaging of the food, in the drinks. That's a whole other question story, which we can get to. Laurie, this is great. We'll take a short commercial break and we'll be right back to hear more about really, not only Laurie's story, but the lessons they have for each of us. We'll be right back after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tennis Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck. Fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to The Miracle Within You. Today I'm talking with Laurie Etchells, who has a very, very powerful story about being your own advocate. And under threat of a serious illness, you take every opportunity to make sure you know exactly what's going on. Laurie, before we left for that first commercial break, you were talking about how you work in an environment with chemicals, etc. Perhaps you could briefly explain exactly what it is that you do.
I am a dental assistant, and I have been in the same practice for almost 28 years, but I've actually been in this business since 1978. So with that being said, it's not so much today that we use the amount of chemicals that we used to, because now everything is so computerized that we just scan everything with a computer. But we used to use a lot of chemicals to make partials and dentures. And there's several steps, you know, involved in doing all that. And right up until the actual final product, you're working with different chemicals. And some of them can be very, very strong in smell. And back in the day, we never used to wear masks to work with that stuff. Well, I wear a mask now from the time I walk in the door till the time I leave, pretty much.
Right. And
just
is that,
for my own safety. But
yeah, is that standard practice now, would you say, in the dental field?
For the most part, most people do wear them. Not everybody does. But when we work on a patient, we do. But I wear it all the time.
Right.
And the reason why I now wear it all the time is because of the surgery I had eventually, which was like a year and a half ago, I became what is called a type 3C diabetic. So that's an autoimmune disease. I have no spleen because when they did my surgery, they did a distal pancreatectomy and that lost the blood supply to the spleen. So I lost my spleen, which, as we all know, fights infections. And I also have psoriatic rheumatoid arthritis, which is another autoimmune disease. So I have three autoimmune diseases. And I never know. You know, I've had a patient who said to me, "Why are you wearing that mask in here?" And they persisted on this. "Just take it off. It's okay." And I said, "I'm protecting myself. I don't know where you've been."
Right, right.
That was the end of that conversation.
Yeah, well, no. And again, people have these sort of political views about masks and people. And they really don't know somebody's history, why they're wearing it.
I'm leaning right over the top of your open mouth. So that's why I wear a mask.
Yes, very smart. Very smart. So let's go back. 2011, then you're now diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And what were the measures, you know, the surgical measures and the medical measures and the lifestyle measures that you then adopted or had to adopt to survive?
Well, the first thing was the surgery.
Right.
Which was pretty invasive. I did not have a Whipple, but I had what they call a distal pancreatectomy and a spleenectomy. And that took off the back half of my pancreas and all of my spleen. And it was an incision about 11 or 12 inches long. So it was a major surgery. I was in the hospital for a week. Recovery was about 6 or 7 weeks. And the reason I really went after everything and became a good advocate for myself was my surgeon at the 6-week checkup said, "You know, half the battle is going to be in your head with all of this. You have to be strong. You have to do all the things that you're going to need to do, which is exercising, eating well. But you're going to have to be positive about all of this. If you sink into depression, you will not succeed in this." And they then had me go do radiation and chemo. So because of where the pancreas is located, the surgeon wanted me to see a particular radiologist at MUSC because it's right in the middle of all your organs. So when you're doing radiation, you can really damage your kidneys and your liver and whatnot if you're not doing it correctly. So I moved up to Charleston with some friends that used to be neighbors that moved up there. And every Monday, somebody showed up at my door to take me to MUSC. And every Friday, somebody showed up to drive me back to Hilton Head for the weekend because we had an 11-year-old at that time, our youngest one. And she had a life, and I wanted her life as undisrupted as possible. So we had another neighbor that sent out an email, and before I knew it, I had rides back and forth from Charleston for all that 6 weeks, plus the next 5.5 months for chemo every Friday, because my tumor was encapsulated and calcified. It was so old, and it had two different types of cancer in it: acinar cancer, which is more aggressive, and the pancreatic neuroendocrine cancer, which is the one that has come back a few times. But it's the lazy cancer. It's like a 3 out of 10. So it's been treatable. We jump on it every time it rears its little head. But I did that 6 weeks up there with 3 pills of chemo in the morning and 3 pills at night and a second chemo on Fridays that was administered by IV. And I hopped in that radiation tube every day for 6 weeks. And after that, I was 4 years where they were just watching little things before it came back again.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because I was impressed what you said. And MUSC is an amazing place. It's really incredible. My wife went there when she had cancer. It is really an incredible facility in Charleston, South Carolina. What I was struck by when I went there is that everyone you met, not just the doctors, but the reception, even the car park attendant, was so caring and supportive. It's really an amazing place. So, you know, that is fortunate. And you had that surgeon say to you, it's going to be tough. You got to have the right mindset. Do you think, did that help you? Or what would you say about that? Because I think there'd be doctors elsewhere who wouldn't have said that.
No, they were really supportive and really helpful with everything. And the biggest thing that I really liked about them was anytime there's been a reoccurrence for me, I don't have one doctor making that decision about what we're going to do next. It's a whole slew of the best. There's like 12 or 14 of them, and it's called the tumor board. And they put your case up on the screen, and they look at everything there together. And between them, they decide what the best course of action is going to be for the newest tumor that popped up. Because after 4 years, I was diagnosed stage two, but right. 4 years later, it had moved to my liver, so it was stage four. And that was an interesting time because they had me talk to a surgeon first, and he said, I'm not going to operate on you. He said, because you've got seven or eight tumors in your liver we can see, you could have 25 more that we can't see. And yeah. Yes, I can take off 3/4 of your liver and it will grow back. But I'm not going to be the one to do that invasive surgery on you, which you've already had done once, and then be the one to have to tell you in 6 months I did no good because the tumors were still there. So I was like, okay, then what are we going to do next? So Dr. O'Brien, my oncologist, said, let's send you back to Dr. Marshall, your radiologist. So I walked in there and he started telling me, well, we could do this and we could do that. And I looked at him and I said, Dr. Marshall, I don't want to hear what can be done. I don't want to make a choice. I have one question for you. If you were me, what would you do? And he said, oh, that's simple. I do the Y90 procedure. And I said, okay, let's do the Y90 procedure, whatever that is. And before I left there that day, I had to sign a paper taking responsibility that if I backed out, I was going to be liable for $60,000 worth of radiation seeds.
Wow.
Because what they do is they go in through your femoral and your radial artery. And what they do with the liver is they do what's called a mapping of the liver first. They do one half of the liver first. And what they do is they find out where all the main arteries are coming out of there. They embolize some of them because when they do put those seeds in, they don't want them going to your lungs or other places that they don't belong. And there's 5% of complete liver failure, 5% chance. So I did that. And they mapped the right side. And a week later, I went in and they implanted the seeds. And then a month later, we went back and we did the same thing over again on the other side of the liver. And it was pretty successful. I think it would have been completely successful. But on the very last go, my femoral artery started to spasm and they couldn't get all the seeds in. So I think that would have probably been successful completely if that hadn't happened, but it did. So I was good for about 4 years again, and they watched it. You know, there were little spots on my liver. They still continued to watch from there.
Right. Again, amazing wisdom there, Laurie, asking the person you completely trusted in what he would do. And followed his advice, and that sounds like it was like the best thing you could have done, right? Yeah.
I mean, I know they want to give you all your options, but
right.
At the end of the day, he's the specialist.
Yeah.
Ask him what he'd do.
Excellent point. Excellent point. If you were in my position, what would you do? Exactly. Mm-hmm. Really good. Yeah, you... At those critical times in this journey of yours, You absolutely have asked the right questions to the right people, and done
So
the right
that's one
things.
problem that a lot of people don't know how to ask questions, because I have more than just dental background. I have a lot of medical background just from being in this business for so long. So I kind of know a lot more of what to ask than most people. But the most important thing I can tell someone is, if you're not sure, say what I said. If you were me, what would you do? And you'll have your answer.
Yeah, really. Yep. Excellent, excellent point. So there you were again at a critical moment. Because in retrospect, if you had done one of the alternatives, it probably wouldn't have worked out as well as it has, right?
No, I don't think it would have.
No, I
I really
mean,
don't.
this is pretty amazing. Here you go 13 years later. And so you said that. You had these surgeries and these different procedures, and it kept you going well for like 4 years. And then you needed what?
And then I
Some
had 4 year, again after the Y90 procedures, and they started popping back up in my liver about 4 years later. So there was a new, well, I did 3 months of chemo after that, and it did nothing. So there was a Dr. Marshall sent me to interventional radiology, to a radiologist that had actually worked with him on the Y90 procedure, who was young. He looked like he was about 25. He wasn't. He was more like 30, 33, something like that. But Dr. Yamada is an interventional radiologist, and I love the ground that man walks on, because not only did he help with the Y90 procedures, but he's one of the kindest doctors I've ever met in my life, and he is also super smart. He said, "Okay, let's try this first." It was a brand new immunotherapy that had it was invented in Germany. It's called Lutathera, and it's specific to my cancer, and it has was being done. It had only been in the States for about maybe 15 months or 18 months at the most, and was only being done at Sloan Kettering and Boston. And I was actually the first person at MUSC to have that done. And it involved whole day hooked up to an IV to a machine that looked like it was as archaic as it comes. It's this little square metal box. That's all I can tell you. And I went through four immunotherapy treatments, between September and March. And my last one, ironically enough, was the day they closed MUSC in Charleston down because of COVID.
Oh, wow.
So I had trouble finding my way actually into the building that day. And I kept asking people, and they're like, "I don't know. We don't even have to get in there to get to work." And finally, I asked the guy, and he turned around, and he happened to be one of my care team members for the Lutathera treatment. So he grabbed me and he said, "Come on, let's go. We'll figure this out." And I was radioactive. I had to stay 10 feet away from everybody for about, I think it was 5 or 6 days, something like that. So I couldn't go home because of my child and my dogs and my cats. So, and my husband. So I stayed at a friend's house for that time, and I stayed upstairs, holed up in a bedroom up there. And then that was okay for about 15, 16 months. And then the spots started reappearing again. And I landed up doing going back to my interventional radiologist and doing chemoembolizations. And I did those. There were two procedures. And again, it was just like back in the Y90, where they do one half of the liver first and then the other half. Good news there for me was, as he said, we don't have to map your liver. We already know it.
All
So all
right.
they had to do was go in and do that 1 month and do the other one a couple weeks later. And I've been clear pretty much since then. I also at that time had a cancerous lymph node above the clavicle, and that went away. And now they're just watching. Yeah, to
Wow.
see.
Wow. Amazing, amazing story. Let's take a short break and we'll be right back to think about the implications for other people of what you have done. So we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet, mix with water, and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home, or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives, just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active, super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to The Miracle Within You, and today we've been hearing from Laurie Etchells, who has described her own miraculous journey through her own diligence, her own concern, and being her own advocate, and finding some amazing medical practitioners. She was able, despite being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer 13 years ago, is now in amazing shape. And we've been hearing that incredible story. Laurie, you must have come across all sorts of people subsequently, because you know you share your story, and I'm sure people react to it with amazement and inspiration. Typically, I'm sure you also run into people who said, "Well, I wish my spouse or I had done that," right?
I do. Sometimes it's usually I wish I had gone to Mayo, or I wish I had gone to MD Anderson, or I wish I had gone to MUSC.
Right.
But we really do have amazing physicians at MUSC. I had someone who called me, and I had referred them to my oncologist, and he was gracious enough to take them in as a patient. That person was going to see my surgeon, and he decided he was going to go to MD Anderson instead. So he called there, and they said, you know, well, who's your doctor? Who's the surgeon? And when he said the surgeon's name, they said, you don't need to come to MD Anderson. He came from MD Anderson, and we wish we had him back. He's the best.
Yeah.
And he was my surgeon. So
yeah, and that is so important. Again, one of the themes of the show and the concept is the interaction with physicians, and the fact that physicians are prepared. Obviously, you know, you can't give people false hope, but are prepared to give them as much hope as they reasonably can, where they can be compassionate, where they have a relationship with you, where you can actually say what you did. What would you do? And I'm going to follow that. You know, that is so critical, that physician and physician team support side of it is really amazing, because I'm sure I could imagine places where if you had gone, they would have ignored you. You know?
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, so that is really an essential part of this whole concept, is you got to have the people on your side who know what they're doing and want to help you and are compassionate enough, and don't just treat you as another case.
Yes, that's true. And I like getting the word out there that you need to be doing these things for yourself. I've actually spoken a couple of times at MUSC before their boards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, there aren't that many of us alive. You know, they're just now. Every time my cancer has come back, there's always been something new available to do. And as my son said to me, he said, "Mom, don't worry about it right now. Every year you're alive, there's another discovery on the horizon." And there has been. I mean, the Lutathera was new. While it didn't last, you know, long term, it still helped me move forward for a year and a half. And everything that I've done has been, I've been able to maintain my quality of life and stay at work.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and that's really an excellent point. Most people will think of this sort of long-term, well, you know, long-term, is it really, you know, what kind of life am I going to lead? But, you know, you keep going, you're going to go into a new era of medicine. As you said, probably every month new things are happening, but certainly every year. So, you know, you survive a year or two or three, now there's going to be other options for you that weren't there originally. So mm-hmm. That's a really excellent, excellent point. Yeah. So you have been blessed with the wisdom you had and being around people who were ready to help in any way. Again, we can't say enough about MUSC and the cancer treatment they offer. It's really amazing. And of course, you have a tremendous empathy for people who suffer from all sorts of cancer. How do you kind of channel that? I know you're involved informally in different ways. How have you channeled that when you come across people who may be facing similar circumstances?
I listen, but when I first had my surgery and was recuperating, no, when I got done with surgery and 7.5 months of chemo and radiation and stuff, I was invited to an event in Charleston at Brittlebank Park. And I don't know if you're familiar with dragon boat racing, but dragon boat racing is an old Chinese thing, and it is now used in the United States to raise money for cancer, either for cancer awareness, cancer research, sometimes helping people who have cancer and don't have financial resources to get everything they need. So I went to that and I watched it, and my whole family went with me, and they had t-shirts made and all that kind of stuff. And I looked at my husband and I said, "I'm going to be on that boat next year." And I am 11 years into it now. I raced for Hollings Cancer Center. So I raced with doctors and nurses from MUSC, and I think I might be one of maybe three people who have had cancer on our boat. But I raced with nurse oncologists. I raced with thoracic surgeons. I've raced with nurse advocates, lab guys, all kinds of people like that. And I do that every year, and I get a lot of really good emotional support for myself out of that. And I've also met so many people up there that when somebody does call me, and I don't even know how these people get my name and number, but they do, I've even been able to pull off emailing my doctor or one of my doctors and saying, hey, I need you to do me a favor and see this person, please. And and they do.
Wow.
They do.
Yeah. So you're
but a bit talking of a... to people helps me too.
Excellent point. That's really an excellent point. And it's true about support. I'm big into support for any sort of change or crisis or challenge that one's having. You need support. Support is essential. It's too difficult to do it on your own. And there are so many values of support. So you're absolutely right.
And there's a saying, it takes a village. It really does.
So somehow magically people find your number and call you and ask for your advice or whether you can come in.
Sometimes it's advice, but it seems to be more than anything, they want to pick my brain a little bit about what I went through or what to expect if they're having one of the procedures I've had before, because you know, the doctors and nurses can tell, they may be great, but they can tell you, but if they haven't experienced what it's like to actually have that procedure or that surgery, they don't really know. And I think that's what people want to find out, you know, how bad was it with chemo? Well, it wasn't easy, but I never missed a day of work. That was back in the day when we developed film. And I would go take my x-rays of my patient and I would go and it would take 3 or 4 minutes to develop that film. And they'd find me laying on top of the machine, laying my head down on top of the machine. But I didn't want to just come home and stay home. So I went to work and people are like, you worked all the way through that? And I'm like, for me, it was mentally good to be busy. Instead of just staying at home by myself all day long while everyone else was at school or work. They just want to hear, you know, what it was like for this and what it was like for that. And, you know, where did you go and who did you have and what did you do? All of that kind of thing.
I agree. That is so critical. I mean, there's, you know, the scientific knowledge and all the technical stuff. But just what you're saying, I want to know what it's like going through this. Right. I know what you're going to do, but what does that mean? How am I going to feel? What am I going to be able to do? So
how much is it going to hurt? Am I going to be throwing up every day, all day long? Am I going to be able to get out of bed?
Absolutely. It's really huge. So I could see, they should have a video of you explaining this. So that, no, seriously, because that, you know, there's one thing, as I say, getting scientific medical advice. The other is hearing from people who've gone through the procedure. That's what they want to know. What is it going to be like?
I mean, I drive to MUSC once a month just to get a shot in my hip, and that's it. I get there, they do triage. If everything's good, they order it. I wait around for a half hour, 45 minutes. I get the injection, walk out the door, and drive home. And it's a preventative shot that I've been doing for probably 6 or 7 years now, probably 7 years. And it's called Sandostatin. And it is, our body produces actually a hormone. This is the way it was explained to me by my nurse practitioner, that aids in fighting cancer. But it dissipates almost as soon as it's created. So they have synthetically reproduced that hormone to last a month. And so every month I go up and I get that shot and I don't miss that appointment. Hardly, you know, once maybe I've missed it. That's it.
No, that's great. And again, you're still with your team. And I know that you feel that MUSC are almost family, really, what you have gone through together. And that's fantastic. That's fantastic. One would hope and wish that it could be like that everywhere, but we're not there yet. But MUSC is. And you have been wise enough to navigate that very, very carefully and appropriately. It's a really, really, really a great story with a lot of power for people. Be your advocate. Don't just take somebody's word for it. Make sure that you're convinced of whatever anyone is saying. Don't be too convinced about genetic past history, who had it and who didn't. This is you. Find the best people who will have compassion and you can trust. Get the support. And here you are, Laurie, doing well. Almost 15 years later. And I should tell you that Laurie still works, but because I live right around the corner from her, you know, I know that, they're going off to listen to a concert or they're going off on a vacation. You certainly make use of your time because I think you realize how valuable every moment is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My biggest motivation was not myself, but the fact that my youngest child was only 11. Mm-hmm. The others were 20, 30, and 31. You know, so they were pretty much grown and gone. But I had this 11-year-old daughter who I had when I was 42. I lost my father when I was 16. I did. Mm-hmm. I know what that's like. I didn't want her to go through that. I fought like hell and did everything I was supposed to do.
Yes, you did. And Madison is a lovely young lady. She's doing really well, isn't she?
Yep. She's out of college and she's almost 25 years old. And at least I got to watch her grow up.
There you go. That's awesome. Thank you so much. This is really an inspirational story. I really appreciate your time here, Laurie. If people want to reach out to you and find you and talk to you more, is there a way they can do that?
Yes, I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
So it's Laurie and it's Etchells. I have a cell phone. If you call me and I don't answer, leave me a message. I will call you back. I'm probably working or with a patient. It's 843 area code 290-4850. I talk to people all the time. Some of them I know from friends. Some of them I have no clue who they are, don't know where they got my number, but I'm always happy to listen to someone who needs, whether they just need to use someone as a doormat for that, need an ear to listen, or just want to pick my brain, that's fine.
Excellent. Well, thank you for sharing your story and your brain. I think, inspirational. So I really appreciate Laurie. Keep up the great work.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Miracle Within You. Join me next time when I continue to explore the power of the mind-body and how it can be employed to enhance health and healing.